right, welcome back to a special edition of the Deep Dive Presents, brought to you by PW Torch. I am, of course, Rich Fan, joined today by Chris Bournet, and we're talking about not only Chris's works in the literary world, but we're also going to talk a little bit about his film debut, Lady Wrestler, which I'm going to let Chris kind of give the details to as far as the times and places. Chris, welcome to the Deep Dive, and thanks for taking the time to chat.
Thank you, Rich. It's an honor to be here. I really appreciate the invitation.
So why don't we start with Lady Wrestler? Can you tell everyone the genesis of the project? What got you into doing the film?
Sure. Well, Lady Wrestler, the subtitle of the movie is The Amazing Untold Story of African-American Women in the Ring. So I was born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, still live here, went to Ohio State. And so, you know, I'm African-American, and I obviously grew up in the African-American community. And I never heard about these black women who were famous professional wrestlers back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s until a friend of mine, another black male named Terry Anderson, who is a local public relations specialist, told me about these women. And I am I spent a lot of my career as a journalist. I've worked at a couple of African-American newspapers, the Call and Post and the Columbus Post. And at the time Terry told me about these women, I was working at a community newspaper called This Week, which is a subsidiary of the daily newspaper, the Columbus Dispatch. So periodically I would call. Terry at the time was working for an arts organization, and arts and entertainment was part of my beat. So I would periodically call Terry for story ideas, and off and on he would mention to me, he would say, Chris, there's this really interesting lady that I grew up with in my neighborhood. I was friends with her daughter, and I believe she was some kind of wrestler. She always had bodybuilders and wrestlers and actors hanging out over her house, and she's a really interesting person. You should sit down and talk to her sometime. So Terry arranged an interview with me and the lady who turned out to be Ethel Johnson, who is like the main interviewee in the documentary. And she told me all these amazing stories about starting when she was a teenager, becoming a professional wrestler along with her two sisters, her older sister Babs Wingo and her younger sister Marva Scott. There was this huge wrestling enterprise in Columbus that was started by a wrestling promoter named Billy Wolf. And so Billy was Caucasian, but he was inspired by Jackie Robinson and how Jackie Robinson integrated Major League Baseball. And for some reason, Billy was like a failed wrestler, but he, for some reason, got really interested in women's wrestling. And he married a woman named Millie Bliss, who ended up changing her name to Mildred Burke and became the first women's world wrestling champion. So Billy and Mildred built this wrestling enterprise. They ended up, they were from Missouri and ended up settling in Columbus. I think mainly because Columbus is like centrally located in the nation and it's within a day's drive of many different parts of the country. So a lot of the wrestlers had to drive to their matches. But that was before, this was back in the 30s up through the 60s, up, you know, before airplane travel was really common. So Billy started recruiting black women into his organization, and Babs Wingo and Ethel and Marva were three of the first black women who joined their organization. So I thought Ethel had this really amazing story. She talked about going all over the world to like Canada. She spent a lot of time in Montreal. She went to Latin America, had a stage name in Latin America, Rita Valdez. She went to Cuba before the embargo, Puerto Rico, Mexico, Australia, Japan. And then she talked about her experiences wrestling in the United States, especially in the Deep South. All African Americans, but especially athletes and entertainers who were traveling a lot, they had to stay in these segregated hotels, and they had to go in the back door of restaurants. So the downside of that was being treated like a second-class citizen, obviously. But the silver lining, so to speak, was that all these black athletes and entertainers came to form like this brotherhood and sisterhood. And Ethel in the documentary talks about becoming friends with Joe Louis, the boxing legend, and how he started refereeing a lot of the women's wrestlers' matches, and staying at the same hotel with like Ike and Tina Turner, and getting to know Ray Charles and all these people that are, you know, we look at as like icons from back in the day were just these women's peers. They were just fellow African-Americans who were relegated to the same circumstances. So I ended up writing an article for the Columbus Dispatch about mainly about Ethel. And the article came out the same weekend as there's a big sports festival in Columbus that was founded by Arnold Schwarzenegger called the Arnold Classic. And the article happened to be published the same weekend in March 2006 as the Arnold Classic. So the Arnold Classic organizers actually called me up and said, wow, these black lady wrestlers sound really amazing. We'd like to give Ethel a Lifetime Achievement Award. So Ethel is a little bit, she's a retired grandmother now, and she's a little bit shy of the limelight. So she kind of told, she said, well, tell them I said thanks, but no thanks. So I just kind of thought, wow, her story is just so much grander than just this one newspaper article. And I found out through the course of writing this article that there were dozens of women like her. And I had always had an interest in filmmaking. So I asked her if she would be interested in being interviewed on camera. And to my surprise, she said yes. And through the course of writing the article, I found another lady wrestler named Ramona Isbell. She agreed to be interviewed. And I also talked to the children of Marva Scott, Ethel's younger sister, who passed away in 2003, along with Babs, her older sister, also passed away in 2003. So it was a long, making the documentary was a long process over several years, doing interviews and with the ladies on several different occasions. I also talked to a commentator named Jeff Lean, a Washington Post reporter who wrote a book about Mildred Burg called Queen of the Ring. And he actually referred me to the Wrestling Archive at the University of Notre Dame, which is this treasure trove of press clips and old vintage photos and just anything you can think about from the, what they call the golden age of wrestling back from the 30s through the 50s. It was just amazing, an amazing amount of documentation. So that really helped a lot with the research and finding out about what these wrestlers' lives were like back then.
So for you, Chris, as a person with a primarily journalistic background,
yeah,
talk about the difficulty of making a documentary. Because I was listening to the Wexner Public Library podcast you did, and I really want the listeners to kind of get an idea of the work you had to put in before this even got to the screen.
Yeah, well, my degree is in English. I majored in English at Ohio State, and I did study film and television production at a local arts high school called Fort Hays. It's sort of like the Fame High School. You know, like there were literally people dancing in the aisles just like the Fame School. So I was in the radio and television program. But I did, you know, that was years and years ago when I was still in high school. So my film training is actually just stuff I picked up along the way by reading books and reading like Movie Maker magazine and Video Maker magazine. And I've always been inspired by people like Spike Lee, who, even though Spike Lee went to film school, but people who are kind of like independent and don't wait for the Hollywood establishment to tell you, okay, we'll give you $10 million or $20 million for your movie. I was always inspired by people who kind of, you know, maverick people who kind of did it on their own. One of the books that really inspired me was this book called Rebel Without a Crew by Robert Rodriguez about the making of El Mariachi, where he basically just borrowed a film camera and actually took like an analog tape recorder and made this little movie, El Mariachi, for $7,000 that went on to like make millions and was picked up by Miramax. So I thought, okay, well, I'm a passionate lover of film. I may not have a lot of technical training, but I can just sort of learn as I go along. So I just bought a digital camera. This is back in the mid-2000s when like digital, the mini DV tapes were like the industry standard at the time. And I bought a boom mic and I just decided to kind of learn as I went. And actually, a friend of mine from high school, Paul Hill, he's an editor. He went to film school, and he's an editor at the Wexner Center for the Arts, where Lady Wrestler is going to debut on March 29th. So the Wexner Center has this awesome program that's like one of the best-kept secrets in Ohio. The Wexner Center is based at Ohio State University, and they have this program called the Film Video Studio Program, where any filmmaker from any part of the country can come in for free and get a residency and basically just get free assistance with editing. So Paul helped me with like kind of taking my, you know, the amateur editing I had done on my my little computer laptop and putting it into a professional editing system. And I actually did the voiceover myself, like the voiceover narration. So they have a professional recording studio. He recorded me doing the narration and just kind of took all my footage and really cleaned it up and cleaned up the sound. And so that was really invaluable. If I would have had to pay a post-production facility, I mean, it would have been thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to do the work that I got for free at the Wexner Center. So I'm really indebted to them. And they have this great program that just is just offered for the love of film, basically.
And given that love of film, I mean, you mentioned Tarantino, you mentioned Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And for you, going into the editing part, going into really talking, breaking down how hard it was for them in terms of civil rights issues, in terms of having to come in the back door, were there times where you had to take five, and how much of it did you feel like I'm kind of hitting a raw spot and maybe we have to stop, or maybe we press forward because this is authentic? How did you find that balance?
Yeah, it definitely helped having been a newspaper reporter for years and kind of knowing when to ask probing questions and knowing kind of, you know, when to back off a little bit. Surprisingly, the women that I interviewed, Ethel Johnson and Ramona Isbell, they were very forthcoming. They talk, and I think a lot, I think because it's, that was back in the 50s and 60s, and they have a lot of, they have distance from it now, and they've been out of the wrestling industry for decades, so they have perspective. But they were actually very forthcoming in talking about how, you know, they would go wrestle in these towns that were like, they called them sundown towns, where they would literally like post notices that said, N-word, don't let the sun set on you here. Meaning you had to get out of town before dark because the Klan would come get you.
Wow.
Ramona talked about, you know, a lot of times they were overseas, they were a lot more open-minded toward African-Americans. But Ramona even talked about experiencing racism overseas. Like she said, she was in Australia one time in Sydney, and she had some downtime before a match. So she just decided to go browse through the mall. And she said a store clerk told her while Ramona was looking at a dress, she said, I'd rather you not touch that. And it was very clear to Ramona that it was because she was Black. So they definitely had a lot of very harrowing experiences. I interviewed the children of Marva Scott, Ethel's youngest sister, and Kim Martin, Marva's daughter, recounted a story that her mother had told her about being in Japan. And some wrestling promoters who Marva believed were in the mafia told Marva that if she didn't throw the match and let the opponent win, that they were going to throw her out of a skyscraper window. So Marva ended up having a nervous breakdown and being in a sanitarium for like 3 or 4 months in Japan before she came back home. So these women were incredibly strong to endure all of this. And they were doing this before, you know, before the civil rights movement really kind of picked up steam. They were doing this before the feminist movement. So these women were really trailblazers. And I just thought it was really unfortunate that they had fallen into obscurity for whatever reason. So that's why I was so passionate about completing this documentary and getting their story out there. I mean, the movie Hidden Figures, that was another one about these Black women that did this amazing work that's just kind of fallen by the wayside in history. And even though professional wrestling may not have the impact that working for the NASA space program, you know, had on society, but it was still, these women were trailblazers and pioneers when a lot of women weren't even working outside the home at that time.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday Edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
And do you think, given our current landscape with women's wrestling, there is enough said about the role of African-American women? I always think about Miss Jackie. I think about, you know, a Jazz later on. Even now with some of the ladies like Alicia Fox, Brandi Rhodes. So how do you think they would look at the – if I don't know if they got to see some of the newer wrestlers. How do you think the old school and the new school as far as interactions and – where do you think they see them in history?
Well, I would absolutely love to talk to someone like Alicia Fox and get her opinion on what these women contributed to the sport, because obviously there'd be no Alicia Fox if there hadn't been an Ethel Johnson or a Babs Wingo or a Marva Scott. These women literally kicked the door down, not only for other professional wrestlers, but just for female athletes in general. People, like I said, people tend to see wrestling as like fake and staged and whatever. But wrestling, I found out making this documentary, wrestling is one of the few sports where women are really kind of given, not, I wouldn't say the same opportunities, but they're, if you can wrestle, whether you're male, female, black or white, wrestling fans really appreciate that. So I think the fact that not only these black women, but, you know, Rocky Johnson, Dwayne, you know, The Rock's father, Bobo Brazil. The women talk a lot about Bobo Brazil in the documentary and being friends with him. There are all these black wrestling legends that some of them have been inducted into halls of fame, but a lot of these African-American wrestlers, unfortunately, their names have just been forgotten. And Jeff Lean, the reporter that I interviewed, he talked about how women have not really gotten their recognition in wrestling, let alone the black women. And he even said the wrestling industry seems to have amnesia about this chapter of history. But it is getting better because the WWE has started to recognize some of these legends. They even made a video game out of Marva Scott. And they've started to, some of the wrestling halls of fame have started inviting some of these older women who are still living to be inducted into halls of fame. So the wrestling industry is starting to come around and realize that African Americans made a lot of, and women made a lot of contributions to, you know, what is now the WWE.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about that video game. I did not know that. So how did that come about, and what do you know about it, if anything?
I don't know a whole lot about it. Actually, Kim Martin, Marva Scott's daughter, she actually sent me this link on Facebook that WWE had posted something to their website. They have like some kind of legend series where they have a video game that features like legendary wrestlers from the past, and Marva was one of the legends featured in it. I actually don't have a copy of the video game, but when I saw that they were actually coming out with a video game, I thought it was, wow, it's long overdue. It's about time. Of course, Marva is long gone, and I don't know what if there's any financial arrangement with the family, but it just seemed like her image was being used, and I don't know what, if any, her descendants will, what profit they may or may not see from that. But the good side of it is that the wrestling industry is starting to recognize that a lot of these legends, women and African Americans, are people that they should honor and recognize and, you know, immortalize some way, whether it's in a video game or inducting them into halls of fame.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. And I thank you for that. Yeah. I'm definitely going to look into that, 'cause that's pretty cool. Let's talk a little bit about, because obviously you're going to have the first showing at the Wexner Center for the Arts. So why don't you tell folks, if they're in the area or want to make the trip, where they could find it and how they can get tickets or how it works as far as getting access to premiere and watch the film.
Yes, thank you, Rich. So the Wexner Center for the Arts tickets are available online at wexarts.org. That's WEXARTS.org. You can also buy tickets in person. And not that I have the number memorized or anything, but you could actually call 614-292-3535 and like order tickets over the phone, or like if you're interested in like group sales, like a big group of people going together, I think you actually have to order the tickets over the phone. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. And it's really like a full circle experience for me, since I'm an Ohio State graduate. Getting to show my debut movie at Ohio, on the campus of Ohio State, is really, really, really awesome, and makes me feel like I said, like I've come full circle.
Yeah, it sounds like. Now, before we go, I do want to talk a little bit about, you mentioned the literary side. I looked in your notes. I saw you're an accomplished author. So can you
Thank
talk
you.
About your two works and how different they are? Because I, like we said before we were doing the pre-show, I'm going to go see A Wrinkle in Time. So I'm really interested in your fiction. But the nonfiction work as far as comedians go, I really want to hear more about that as well.
Thank you so much. And it's really kind of odd that you mentioned A Wrinkle in Time, because I went to Catholic school up through eighth grade, a school called Holy Spirit. And we had this really well-stocked library. And one of the books that I read over and over when I was a kid in my school library was this book called Camilla by Madeline L'Engle. And I never read A Wrinkle in Time for some reason, but Madeline L'Engle was one of my favorite authors as a child. And another one of my favorite authors, young adult authors, was this woman named Norma Klein. She wrote a lot of best-selling young adult books. And there was this another library right across the street from my school, the Whitehall Library. And there was this, I come from an interracial family. Both my parents are African-American, but I actually have three white step parents and four biracial siblings. So I grew up with black and white intermingled. It was just everyday life. I didn't see any discrimination with my own eyes. Like, I never saw people staring at us or telling my mom, you shouldn't be married to a white man. Or my father, you shouldn't be married to a white woman. I just never saw any negative side of being an interracial family. But there was this book that Norma Klein wrote called Bizou, about a girl who was half black and half French, who was raised in Paris by her black mother, who was a African-American mother who was a fashion model, and her father was French. And so Bizou goes on this quest to find like her father's side of the family. So that inspired this idea that I had for my novel called The Chloe Chronicles, about a black French Creole girl who grows up in Paris. Her mother is a black woman from New Orleans and never knew her father. Her father's a white Frenchman. So Chloe kind of goes on this quest to find her identity. And I wrote that book over the course of many, many years, believe it or not, starting in middle school when I first read this book by Norma Klein. So I published that novel back in 2012. And so actually in that same year, I got a call from a man named Raymond Lambert. He was referred to me by Will Haygood, who is this very well-known and accomplished journalist and author who wrote the script, who actually wrote the article that the movie The Butler with Forrest Whitaker and Oprah Winfrey is based on. So Will and I started out at the same newspaper in different decades. He worked there in the 80s. I worked there in the 90s at the Call & Post. It's an African-American newspaper. So Raymond Lambert was the owner of this comedy club called All Jokes Aside in Chicago. It was very, very popular in the 90s. Pretty much any comedian you can name who's like in their 40s or a little older got their start at All Jokes Aside. Steve Harvey, Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, Monique. So Raymond had made a film crew had actually made a documentary about All Jokes Aside called Funny Business, funny with a PH, since it was the 90s. And it did very well at the film festival circuit. Got bought by Showtime, aired on Showtime during Black History Month one year. But Raymond had this larger story that he wanted to tell about his life, because he was the first in his family to go to college. He went to Morehouse. He went to graduate school and became an investment banker. He had this really, and then he went to work for, he started his career on Wall Street. Then he moved to Chicago and worked for Chris Gardner, Chris Gardner's life was the basis of the movie The Pursuit of Happiness, starring Will Smith. So Raymond has had all these brushes with celebrity, and he's the son of like teenage alcoholic parents, and talks about, you know, growing up with that. So to make a long story short, Raymond called Will Haygood at the Washington Post and was like, I read your biography of Sugar Ray Robinson. I think you're a great writer. Would you be willing to collaborate with me on my memoir? Will was like, I'm actually in the middle of writing a script for this movie called The Butler, but a friend of mine back in my hometown, Columbus, Ohio, named Chris Bornay might be interested. So Raymond called me, and when he told me his story, I was actually already working on the documentary at that point. And I actually, but when Raymond told me his story, I was like, wow, this is really another amazing story. And this is an opportunity I can't pass up to work with Raymond. So All Jokes Aside was published by a small Chicago publishing house called Agate. It came out in 2015. So that was a really great experience. Got to meet a lot of great people, and Raymond was really great to work with. So, yeah, I never saw why you couldn't be both a writer and a filmmaker. In fact, you know, Jordan Peele obviously just won the Oscar for writing the screenplay to Get Out, and he directed it. So I don't see why the two, writing and filmmaking, I never saw them as mutually exclusive. I thought you could always combine the two.
Well, that's awesome, and I wish you luck with the premiere of the film. Before we go, the one thing I did want to ask is, similar to Jordan Peele, and that's a great segue to this.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to make Lady Wrestler?
Well, an actual, you know, if I actually sat and tallied up the hours I spent actually like filming and editing, it was probably less than a year, but it was like all that time spread out over. I started in 2006, finished a like rough cut in 2012, and finished the final version in 2016. And the reason why it's just now coming out is because I, like all aspiring filmmakers, have this dream of like being discovered at a film festival. So I submitted it to all the big film festivals like Sundance and Tribeca in Toronto. There was actually another documentary about women's wrestling called Lipstick and Dynamite that came out in 2006. And it played a lot of the big festivals. So I thought, well, if that documentary can do it, then mine can. But that documentary only focused on the white women, only barely mentioned the Columbus angle, and just briefly mentioned the black women. So I thought, well, this is this really amazing story about these black women. Surely festival programmers will be interested in it. And actually, the only festival that I really sort of got any play from was the Cannes Film Festival. It actually, Lady Wrestler wasn't in competition at Cannes, but I got accepted into this filmmaking conference called Le Marché du Film that goes on alongside Cannes. So last May, I went to France. I had actually been there before when I was researching my novel, The Chloe Chronicles. So I got the whole Cannes experience, walked the red carpet, saw all kinds of movie stars, Nicole Kidman, Colin Farrell, Adam Sandler, Emma Thompson, Dustin Hoffman, got to be in a movie premiere with Isabelle Huppert, who's the French Meryl Streep. So it was a really cool experience. As to quote Dudley Moore and Arthur, it didn't suck. So I feel like I got the film festival experience, even though the Lady Wrestler wasn't an official competition. And there comes a time, I've had other actual invitations from like smaller film festivals, but I feel like there comes a time when you kind of have to put it out there in the world. So that's why I'm so excited about the premiere at the Wexner Center on the 29th.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Before we go, why don't you let everyone know where they can find you on social media, your website, obviously when they listen to this in my show notes, I'll have links to your books and to the film itself, but any contact information, any way you want them to get a hold of you, definitely, I give you the floor.
Thank you. Yeah, you can find out about Lady Wrestler at ladywrestlermovie.com. My website is chrisbornay.com, and my last name is B-O-U-R-N-E-A, Chris, C-H-R-I-S, so chrisbornay.com. I'm on Twitter at Chris Bornay, Facebook, Chris Bornay Writer, Instagram, Chris Bornay Writer. So people can reach me through any of those channels. And my website has like my email address on it, and I'm very accessible and always willing to answer questions about Lady Wrestler or the books I wrote or any other questions people may have.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thanks so much for having the time to chat with me and share this awesome story. And I'm sure just like Jordan Peele, we want to say we were there when we heard the first step in the journey of getting Lady Wrestler to screens across the United States. So best of luck with that. And, you know, please, if there's anything we can do or if there's any time, you're welcome to come back and chat as much as you want.
I'd love to. Thanks so much, Rich. I really appreciate it.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.